very pleased to bring in from SI.com, a highly respected, especially by me, Mark Wogenrich. Sir, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Steve. Happy bye week.
Yeah, happy bye week. Yes. somebody said, what does bye week mean to you? I said, well, I stacked a quart of wood last night. I got one more to go. Okay. So I'm tired. Mark, your thoughts on, let's start with the first 18 minutes. If you're Jeff Brohm of Purdue, who's Iowa's next opponent, how badly are you aching to see that first 18 minutes?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, absolutely. Are you thinking, I mean, we might catch these, how does Jeff Brohm of Purdue scout that game? Because how does he choose what is actually the reality of that football game? If that makes sense, that first 18 minutes you're going through it is like, and we can attack this team. You know, we can attack this defense the way Penn State is doing it. And then you look at the other 32 and say, that is not how we want to play them. So, absolutely, that I don't know that I've seen a game change on a dime like that.
Yeah, yeah. Because look, to be honest with you, the Iowa defense. No offense, Mark. Penn State kind of did to them offensively what I thought they would do in the first 18 minutes. I mean, I was not surprised by what I was watching.
The one thing I thought going in is, I mean, you know, going into that game on Friday, we had so much. Our storylines were defense, special teams, field position, kickers, punters, that sort of thing. And I thought this is going to be, who is the edge offensively? Because ultimately, right, that was going to be dictated if you were going to be able to play a clean offensive game that moved the ball and didn't commit any issues. And even Penn State still, with two turnovers, scored on its other three possessions and had the better offense, had the better offensive play calling. And overall, it was moving better and moving at a better pace. And I think doing what it wanted to do more than what Iowa did. And like those first couple of series, Iowa seemed to give away plays on third down.
Yeah.
To me, threw a couple out of bounds. Spencer Petras they were almost give up plays in a sense because of the pressure that Penn State's defense was bringing. I don't think I'm alone. I know I'm not alone in thinking this, but that game continues as it does with the help of Sean Clifford. And it doesn't. So I don't want to pick anything because I'm not. I don't want to be like that person. That, well, if this, you know, if this play doesn't happen, everything else is going to happen exactly the same way after that, which is never the case. Right. But I still think that game is a 14-point victory for Penn State if it continues on that same course.
So then, after that happens, so that's 18 minutes down, still 42 to play. It felt like the next 42 minutes was played the way Kirk Ferentz was begging for it to be played, mm-hmm, because he has spent most of his career winning that way. Is that fair?
Oh, absolutely. When Penn State's average starting field position, I think on those 10 take one Roberson drives was the 16-yard line. And five inside the 10. Yeah.
The average drive start in the second quarter was the 13. The average drive start in the fourth quarter was the 13.
Yeah. And then the last two, obviously, at 8, you know, at the 8-yard line, the one at the 2-yard line. That's what. Yeah. Absolutely. He played it. There was no more indication that he was playing the game that he wanted to play. And the fact that with 2 minutes left, he had his, you know, instruct his quarterback to take knees, make Penn State burn their final timeout and punt from the 50, you know, from inside Penn State territory, from the 50-yard line with a 3-point lead. They weren't up 10. They were not up two scores. I mean, Penn State, you know, with even with 40 seconds left, you know, what if the unthinkable happened and a defender falls down, a receiver gets free, there's a pass interference, Taekwondo Roberson completes a 25-yarder with a defender falling down, and then he gets hit. And then all of a sudden you're at the 50-yard line. Mm-hmm. You know, they were willing to, you know, he was still playing. I mean, that was kind of the quintessence of Kirk Ferentz football right there. that he had the belief, you know, absolutely that his punter and his defense were going to do it.
Right. And again, like that part fell into place because his punter, Taylor, let's give him credit, he kept knocking that ball down inside the 10, which was phenomenal work by him. Conversely, nobody talks about the job Stout did. Stout could have at least driving the thing out. I mean, I give him credit for that. But Penn State couldn't get first downs. And I've used this example a couple of times. I want to know what you think of it, Mark. This kind of like is the essence in some ways of what happened. They start at the 25 after the field goal to make it 20-16. The first play is Noah Kane up the middle. It gets 7, almost 8 yards on the play. So you got about 2nd and 2, 2nd and 3. But on the outside, 25, 30 yards away from the play, one of the wideouts told the other wideout to move over a few feet to be in the right spot, and so he did, but in the process of doing it was moving when the ball was snapped, and they got a false start, and now it's 1st and 15.
No, exactly. That series, I mean, that whole series to me ultimately defined the game because of the false start issues.
Yeah.
Kirk Ferentz was able to take, except the chop block penalty. That's a fourth down. I think under a lot of other situations, maybe coaches are just like declining that, making them punt. Well, Kirk Ferentz says, "No, I'm going to turn you. It's going to be 3rd and 25.
Yeah.
And your propensity is to make them 3rd and 30. And you just you mentioned Jordan Stout. The margin of error, you know, for Penn State at that point was 0, and then that's so at that point Jordan Stout punting from the end zone hits a 38 yarder, not his best punt of the game. The next play, the week before, how many times did James Franklin say play action during that week? I mean, on Tuesday, his news conference on Tuesday, and he said we've got to be ready for play action, and what was the first down play? I mean, that their window was so slim at that point where they were. And it was just, that sequence of kind of like 4 plays in a row. When you're clinging, all three phases right there within like 45 seconds turn the game around.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And, the funny thing is, and I mean, it's not like Taquan never works with the first offensive line. Not tons, but he does. He works with the first team wideouts. He worked with Noyes. But again, he had acreage in front of him. I mean, one of the few times he had good field position was the third quarter, and they got a field goal out of it, where he actually had, was able to maybe comfortably operate in what he could do. It's one of the few times that he had that kind of field position to work with.
I think sometimes the expectation, coaches absolutely have it, and fans absolutely have it, but they have to know. I think coaches have known in the back of their mind, next man up, it works. I think it works in a lot of situations, but when you're dropping a quarter, he was pushed out of an airplane, basically, right there with a parachute and said, all right, go to it. As much, I think it hurt very much for Penn State to lose P.J. Mustipher on defense.
Yes,
That's a huge, huge, huge loss.
No question.
But the guys behind, Devon Ellis and Tilly, and then he got hurt, and then Keziah Izzard, they were able to compensate better on defense. Just the nature of, nature of the position, losing a nose tackle as opposed to putting a quarterback who has, played a handful of snaps and has thrown about 10 passes in his career to drop him on the 20-yard line at Kinnick Stadium in that situation. Next man up, like I said, next man up is a viable statement, but
yes.
But man, it's just in reality, it's so amazingly difficult, and he, what he had to dodge and duck and go through there, without having a real functioning run game to kind of help him out. I think, could the coaches have done right by him by maybe just seeing him struggle using more of the clock? This kind of stuff that I ask these questions. I'm not, I don't know the answers to them because, you know, their game plan in trying to stick with Taquan and stick with Taquan in an offense that he knows, as well as you're trying to keep being that aggressive point. Could they have made other decisions? I don't. Yeah, that's a hindsight issue, but looking at in that moment, those are just all kinds of complicated things factoring in.
Yeah, here's one that's a tough one, because during a commercial break, Jack Ham and I debated this a bit. It was right after Penn State got the field goal in the third quarter. And they had a nice rhythm, and they moved, and they did some tempo on that, right?
Yeah, and it worked. And, I mean, they got head start, he was moving the ball a little bit.
And so Jack looked over at me, and he said, do you think – he said, maybe they had to milk the clock more. And I said, technically, I said, I get exactly what you're saying. And then I pointed to the Iowa sideline. I said, and if you were them, what would you expect Penn State to do? And he said, I'd expect them to milk the clock.
Yeah.
He said, I wouldn't have expected tempo. And you could tell Iowa didn't expect tempo and Penn State got a field goal out of it. So, I mean, there's that catch 22 there. And then that was a point where it worked. I mean, but. Now, I understand the point of like, okay, the backups in the game, milk the clock, the whole thing. But that's what I was expecting you to do.
Yeah, and milking the clock, not milking the clock, they still weren't gaining the yard, so you're still in the field position battle.
Right.
So maybe that's the thing. You're trying to dig yourself out of that field position thing where every drive that he's at, the 16-yard line, is average, and maybe if you run that tempo like you did with that field goal possession, you can maybe flip that field just once.
Yeah.
And that, maybe that's the difference that gives your defense a better chance to hold, and that Iowa doesn't get the ball at the 50 and the 44 in the fourth quarter and is able to turn it into 10 points.
The way, at the end of the game, the last call of the game I made is that Iowa gets the win they needed. Right? And the reason I said that was this. There is no other game after this, except for the Big Ten championship game, where they could have made up for a loss to Penn State. I mean, there's nothing there that's like like one of those like, oh, whoa, hey, that puts them right back in the race. Conversely, Penn State has that on its schedule. Is that how you look at it? That they've got other opportunities.
I even wrote that last week that I said this is a high impact game, a high like priority game that doesn't necessarily have the stakes we really necessarily want to attach to it because of where Penn State is in its schedule, playing a crossover, and then having Ohio State and now Michigan and Michigan State still there. I nothing really happened aside from the injury to Sean Clifford and the injuries really. Nothing necessarily that happened. The result of that game, I don't think, makes much. It doesn't factor into Penn State's what remains for the rest of the season. Their mission statement for the rest of the season. It's the injuries coming out of it that are absolutely the primary. The primary thing. Had they lost, had Sean been able to play the full game and they lose 26-23, I don't think it would have made necessarily much difference. Even if you're looking at the college football playoff committee, who takes things like that into consideration? They won't. Their rankings won't come out until after Penn State visits Ohio State, so that result is still hanging out there. But I think that certainly, if there was a committee, ranking meeting this weekend, and they were putting out your rankings Tuesday, I think that definitely would be. Most certainly into their debate and saying, well, Penn State lost the starting quarterback. They've mentioned that before, so absolutely. Penn State at 11-1, potentially having a rematch with Iowa.
Right.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and wouldn't that be intriguing? Wouldn't that be intriguing with half the stadium? With half the stadium having Penn State fans in there, that would be very intriguing. Mm-hmm. I know you want to go into a bye week with a win, which I brought up, obviously. I brought up to James, and he said, I'd like to go into a bye week with a win. But what do you think about the timing of the bye week for Penn State?
Oh, well, it's even more important. It's even more important now with the injuries.
Yeah.
Not knowing, obviously just not knowing the extent of them. A bye week, I think coaches probably would like the idea. They really like that split. So you get 6-6, so you played 6, you know 6. You're not playing 9 weeks, you're not playing 7 weeks, you're not playing 3 or 5 weeks, and then,
right,
you know, having the unbalance. But after this result, and knowing that you, if you're able to get some guys back for Illinois, and then if not, if you're able to just ride the elements that you have through that game, yeah. I mean, Illinois, what, 93 yards of offense getting shut out by Wisconsin?
Right.
Not saying that that's, every game matters and you can't push anybody over, but if you look like you can strip down your offense for parts and know that these are the things you can do to beat a team like that, this is perfectly placed for Penn State, the bye week.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Appreciate you. You know that.
Absolutely. Appreciate you too, Steve. See you in a couple weeks.
Thank you, Mark. Yeah. See you in a couple of weeks, my friend.